Okay, welcome to episode 42. I've written 41 in my notes, that's wrong. Episode 42 of the Never Iron Anything Comics Review Show, the show where we pick apart a comic, a series, or the work of a single creator. This week I'm joined by a creator, a new creator to the podcast, but an old pal and a collaborator, actually. He's the Uber comics creator and also the Earl of Ipswich. It's Ken Reynolds. Hello, Ken.
Hi, you're right.
Yeah, good man. Good. The
official title.
That's now your official title. Yeah, I always come and pay severance and money to you when I visit Ipswich. In fact, we went to a comic shop and we talked about the comic we're going to be talking about today. Last time I saw you, I think we talked about the specific one. Anyway, how are you doing? How is everything?
I'm
with
not
you?
Too bad. You're going to have to explain more about that comic shop because it's the most comic shop in the country, isn't it? Like old comic shop.
The geezer who runs it looks like Alan Moore swallowed a sofa. That's what I'm going to say. He's a very nice bloke, but he doesn't often get out of his chair and he doesn't have much enthusiasm for many things. Although I did try and cheer him up by buying a trade paperback, which I've yet to read again. You know as well as I do, I went to boarding school in Ipswich and there was a slightly different shop when I was there. Is that related? Was the Globe related to this one?
Yeah, it's actually just across the park from where I live. It used to be up on, I think it's St. Margaret's Green, didn't it?
Quite near Christchurch Park there.
It's Christchurch Park, yeah. And it must have been a bit tucked away up there, I think. But it's the same owner. It's not the same. It's always been the same ownership, and they moved it down to where it is now. But I can't. I did have a chat with him. The guy that runs it now is called Rob.
Right.
And he's been there a bloody long time. And he does talk about the days when it was in another place. And I think he either used to go in there as a customer and then sort of started working there, and then he's literally the furniture now. And but no, he's always interesting to have a chat with. He's a really, really nice guy.
Yeah, he knows his comics, doesn't he? And it is a proper comic shop, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is. Yeah. It really is.
Bit grungy, not somewhere that most people would want to spend a lot of time.
I used to go in the Globe when I was a kid. And I would hang about in there pretty much the whole morning and buy some stuff. And the dude who worked there never said a word to me apart from when I bought something.
Yeah. That could just be an Ipswich thing, to
Might
be fair.
Might be, yeah. Yeah. Was it Pat calls it normal for Norwich or something like that? He calls it, didn't he? Good.
But no, yeah, we did go in there, didn't we?
Yeah, we did. I met him in there, didn't I? Yeah, I was in there for Nobrow trying to sell.
Yeah, my favourite part
stuff
was when you tried to pitch him Nobrow.
I tried very hard that day. I cheered myself up by buying a pair of summer shorts on the way back through town. There you go. Because it didn't go well. It didn't go quite as projected. But I did say to you, I've got to do all the comic shops, and that's one of the last ones on my list. And you went, oh, well. Good luck.
Go out with a whimper.
And then we went for a coffee. So it weren't lost.
No, it wasn't.
Ken, apart from you and I being fabulous collaborators at various points in our minuscule comic careers, you've also chosen the comic we're going to talk about today. Now, you've been kind on me, and rather than choose a lengthy run, which is what's been... I like a lengthy run. That sounds like a sort of Blue Peter double entendre, doesn't it? Yeah. You've chosen a single one and done comic. Did you want to let us know which one you've chosen?
Yep, I've chosen, and I will say mostly because I've chosen one comic because you told me to choose one comic.
Yep.
I could have talked about like the whole run of this, and I might touch on it a little bit later.
Yeah.
But we've chosen Thor: God of Thunder 18, and this issue is written by Jason Aaron, and the art is by Dan Pastoris?
Das Pastoris, isn't it? Which das I think Pastoris. is a pen name, isn't it? Yeah. We'll talk about him in a bit.
Spanish, isn't he?
Yes, that's right, man, yeah. Cover by Esad Rivik. Letters by VC's Joe Sabino. Edited by Lauren Sankovic. Did you want to give... Now, I'm going to say, I learnt three lessons from this. Would you like me to tell you what the lessons are?
Of course.
Viking women are quite forward sexually. Kind of like that. Not as perhaps good looking as I'd have wished.
Fair.
I've had a Tommy Tank over a number of sexy Vikings in my years, and none of them would fall into my bank. And three sort of party poopers.
The Vikings, a little bit, aren't they?
Yeah, Viking women or
Faroe Islands. They get into it a little bit.
They get going a bit
when they think they're not going to die.
Did you want to just give us a little bit of an overview of what happens? and we'll dig into it a bit deeper in a second.
Yeah, in where this sits in the early run, I think this is the last issue of the third volume.
Yeah, so this is 2014, so it's going back a fair amount, isn't it?
It is going back a fair amount.
Yeah.
And the first two arcs, Esad Ribic had done the interiors, he'd done the whole lot, which I think is quite rare, because I think his art is probably quite labour-intensive.
Yeah, I mean, I hear some terrible stories about him being slow. I've heard off a certain editor, who I won't name. But yeah, so he just does the cover on this one, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does, and it's a lovely cover.
Okay.
And I think I picked this, I can't remember why I picked this up. The reason I picked this issue is because it was one of the very first comics I actually bought when I went into the shop that we talked about earlier.
Oh, right, okay. What is the name of that shop, by the way? I can't remember.
It's Central City Comics.
Of course it is, Central City Comics, yeah. Okay, give it a plug. There you go. Yeah. Okay, go on, mate.
And, yeah, I came to comics really late in life. I didn't really start collecting single issues until I was sort of in my 30s.
Bloody hell.
Yeah. I'd always had an interest in
that
comics.
That long ago?
But yeah, that long ago. And I had the usual sort of comics interest when I was a kid, which is sort of the Beano and bits and pieces here and there. But I was never a collector.
Yeah.
And... yeah, it just took me a while to figure out what I like, I suppose, and I started collecting them when I had a tiny bit of disposable income.
So, and, I mean, I know you're a bit of a sort of fantasy novel fan, aren't you? Does that fall into why you got into Thor, maybe, or?
I don't know. I think, to tell you the truth, I think the Marvel movies had quite a bit to do with Thor.
Okay, oh, good news.
If I'm honest.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm the one person that got turned on to comics from the Marvel Universe. I think Thor has been, just because I've always liked mythology and things like that, so Thor was always an easy pull, I think.
Right.
But it taught me a lesson, because this is one of the very few comics that is a bit beaten up that I have in my collection. And when I started collecting them, I did the whole bag and board thing. Do you know what I mean? And I still do to a great extent. But this one was the first one where, you know, when you're closing a bag and you're taping it?
Yep.
And when you take a comic out and it gets stuck on the tape.
I hate that so much. There must be a way of sorting that out, surely.
So early on in my comic collecting career, when I was trying to keep everything pristine, I ripped the front off the title, and I can still see it right now. There's like a rip, there's a chunk out of it.
That's your daughter's university fees right down the shitter, isn't it? Yeah.
but it sort of taught me a lesson of not being too precious about it.
Good stuff. Yeah, I like that. Yeah, completely.
So I still bag and board, but I don't want to keep everything pristine. I just want to keep everything nice and readable, really, and it helps me keep them ordered and stuff like that. But I always think of this issue as one of the first ones where they sort of taught me not to be too precious about things and to read it. And
okay, you know, so had you been reading Thor before this then, had you?
Only in bits and pieces, not right. Like a proper run. So this is where I came into the series. So I had to I then did the thing where I had to go back and get issues 0 to 17,
right? Yeah.
And sort of collect them through, but from issue 18 it's been on my pull list all the way through the like 5 or 6 years until the end of the run earlier this year.
Yeah, which ended with, is it the War of the Realms? Is that where it ended?
No, it ended with King Thor.
Of course it did, pardon me. Yeah, of course it did. And then which Donny Cates took over, didn't he, after that?
Yeah, and I didn't carry on with the Donny Cates one. I've heard good things about it, but I thought, no, I'll jump ship while this massive run has ended and save myself a bit of money for now.
I thought the Donny Cates stuff was good, and the art, whose name I'm blanking on, and the art's amazing. The art's the high point.
Klein?
It'll come to you in a bit. But the thing is with the Donny Cates Thor is it kind of almost like goes, oh yeah, there was all that, which Jason Aaron, you know, bled over for what, 8 years or whatever he was on it. Let's just make him the Herald of Galactus. And I'm like, oh. Okay, so we just forgotten all that history, and suddenly it's about something else.
I never really envied anyone that took over after Aaron because of the way that he told the story. I mean, he obviously left massive gaps of things, but he very much set a distinctive timeline
yeah.
of young Thor, current Thor, old Thor, you know?
Yeah.
And it's a really good narrative device to do that.
Yeah.
And he used it really well all the way through the run. But I always thought whoever comes in after him, that they've sort of either got to forget that this endpoint has been set.
Sorry, it was Nick Klein. I forgot, you're right. Yeah, it was Nick Klein on art. Amazing. You can see it, get it, the Donny Cates one. But yeah, that going back to what you were saying there, mate, that's a technique that he used, and that was already in place throughout the run of God of Thunder that Aaron used, and through the Malkia thing up to here, where he used almost 3 points of time, didn't he, throughout the story?
Yeah.
So it was young Thor, current Thor, and sort of King God,
King,
you know.
Old man Thor, basically. Yeah. King, Thor.
Now, does this
basically
story...
Basically, as King of Asgard.
In release schedule-wise, this story, does it predate... We're not allowed to call her female Thor. Can we call...
Yes,
when
it
Jane,
does.
Yeah, it does predate that. Course,
Mighty Thor.
Mighty Thor, that's right. Yeah, let's call her that from now on. I know people kick off if you say it's female Thor, because they just say, no, it's just actually Thor. Okay, fair enough. Now, on the run-up to this one, we had... Was the two God runs, God Bomb?
Yeah,
God
Bomb, God Butcher, and God Bomb. It was Gaul the God Butcher, weren't it?
Yeah. And, so he went in big, didn't he? I was listening to an interview today. It's a weird, really weird interview. I'll put it in the show notes, but it's a religious comics podcast. Who?
Wow.
Yeah. Who? When the lockdown started, all the comic shops were in trouble. There was a charity that raised money to pay, you know, help pay the bills for comic shops and stuff. And Aaron said, "Look, I'll do a podcast if you want to donate." And this religious podcast donates, and they get on, you know, the creator of the book The God Damned, you know, and also the book Southern. Let's not call it Baptist, Southern Bastards. And he goes on and he talks quite extensively about his love for mythology, and he, you know, he wanted to tackle Thor, and Thor was a biggie for him. And then he just drops in, by the way, I'm an atheist. And they don't blink. They just carry on talking about, you know, like, well, when I was preaching to the congregation last Saturday, I tried, you know, and you're like, oh, well, it's quite friendly. Yeah. But really interesting, yeah. So this was, I think he says 7 or 8 years, I think he ran this for. So this kind of comes as a one and done in the middle, doesn't it? Almost like I suppose you'd call it, a cliche called it, would be a palate cleanser or something like that, would it be? Or...
Yeah, it's a nice, like I said, it sits right at the end of the third run, the third trade. So it's a nice little interstitial sort of issue. In fact, I think most of the third run was like one shots almost like this.
Okay, right.
Because I think it was to give... Esad Ribic a break, I think, or right. Give him time to gear up to the next arc, probably.
So, for those reading along at home, you get God Butcher, God Bomb, and then you get the Malkith story, don't you? Is that right?
I'm trying to think now. Yeah, it is Malkith after that.
It's got the one with the sort of weird... Mindful. It's a bit like Fellowship of the Ring. They get the gang together, don't they?
Well, the third... Yeah, the third runs in the back. It has Aaron doing his. This is the nice thing about the single issues is you get the writer that usually writes something in the back.
Okay.
And especially when it's at the end of the run, and he goes on to explain that this is basically him drawing the map of the Nine Realms.
Yes. Yeah.
So in the third run, he sort of goes dot to dot of young Thor or whichever Thor he chooses, going round. The various locations just to sort of familiarize the reader with the lay of the land before it goes into the big or starts building up to the big War of the Realms. And then it goes the fourth run is the sort of environmentalist run. It's Roz Solomon and Roxxon and all that sort of thing.
Okay, right, interesting. He was saying
that one's quite earth-based, I think.
Oh, it's interesting, because on this podcast, or was it on an interview, I think, a YouTube interview I heard him say, he said, look, he was always a bit pissed off with the Marvel movies, because they kind of, especially the last couple, kind of make it out like that the Asgardians are just another race of people who just have sort of superpowers. And he wanted to take it back to them being gods, which I think he sort of successfully does, and he especially does in this one. It takes it back to that old sort of Norse legends that, you know... type story, doesn't it?
Yeah, especially in this specific one, because it starts off the whole premise of this one is young Thor is visiting Midgard to answer prayers.
Yeah. Yeah. So
you know, and it's just that really simple Norse mythology where he's the personification of what people pray to, you know?
Yeah, so let's give a little summary of what happens in it. So he is as you say, the page one is kind of, it starts on a black panel. Second panel.
Page one is great.
Yeah.
I love a page turn. It's a hell of a page turn.
It is. It really is. So you get him and he looks like he's inside the mouth of something, a creature, and he's looking out through the teeth as it opens slightly over the tongue. And his face, it looks bashed to fuck, doesn't it? And then you turn the page and he's surrounded by... Now, are they all lady Vikings? I think they are, aren't they? I think they're all meant to be ladies. Is that right?
Questionable, but yeah, I think they're meant to be.
Yeah. Don't you get in trouble. In the Faroe Islands in 894 AD. And they're sort of all in armour and, you know, spears and stuff and shields. And they're standing over what is a brilliant design for a dragon. I just love the design of this dragon. And Thor is sort of half in the mouth.
Yeah.
And it looks like they kind of think he's defeated the dragon. While being eaten, yeah. And it turns out, and he gets a kiss off this lady who's in arm. I don't know. It's not my type, but you know what I mean? Any port. And he looks like he's got spaghetti for hair, I'd like to point out at this point. There's a definite spaghetti for hair.
It's
sort of mulched with blood and.
There's
shit.
A weird viscosity to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you know what it's like. You've woken up in the mouth of a dragon.
Yeah.
We've all been there.
We've all been worse places, I'm sure. And it turns out that he didn't defeat this dragon. He just got really drunk with him, and that is his axe sticking out of his nose. The Viking ladies, because I checked on this, and they were Vikings in the Faroe Islands, I think, at this point. I even looked up the Faroe Islands, because that's kind of research I do. Faroe Islands, autonomous islands within the Kingdom of Denmark. North of the United Kingdom, for the Americans who are watching, occupied by the Norse from 300 AD onwards. There is some proof that there were occupants of the islands before that. We're not certain who they were. Now 52,000 people live in there. Faroese is the language, and they have lots of folk tales about giants, apparently. So there you go, that's Faroe Islands in a nutshell for you. Looks quite nice, actually. I quite like to live there, especially if there's so few people. Looks ideal.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's just turned into edutainment.
Hasn't it just?
Just like that.
So they're a bit pissed off with him, and they said, look, he said, look, I didn't, we actually, it wasn't dragons who were killing your dogs and stuff. And the dragon says he's a night eating dog. And he said it was a load of, what are they, trolls, are they?
Yeah, you see, I think that the joy of the first few pages is how well he draws out the realisation that he got drunk with a dragon rather than he slayed it.
Yeah.
He really takes his time to let that unfold.
Yeah.
He takes a good couple of pages over it, and I really enjoyed that. And like, it's so natural that the dragon just wakes up with a hangover and is talking, and no one really seems put out by the fact that the dragon's talking to them.
Yeah, and like, do you know what? It plays on so many things, isn't it? How many times have we woken up somewhere drunken, not really sure how we got there, but are desperate to get out of it and are getting loads of questions? You know, we've all been there.
It's quite the epitome of your worst case scenario. It's like you wake up somewhere with a massive hangover in utter carnage, and you're faced with a load of women asking you difficult questions.
Yeah, one who's kissing you and asking you, "Are you really a stunt man?" Do you know what I mean? It's like that, isn't it? You know, sort of. Did you really kill? You know, defeat the dragon? Or you know, they don't kind of. Yes, and where's his magic hammer? It's like full of double entendres, isn't it?
Yeah,
yeah.
And it's like, don't ask me about the hammer because this is young Thor, and he isn't worthy for the hammer yet, and it's a bit of a sore point.
Right, I get you. Yeah.
So he doesn't like anyone talking about the hammer. But the bit I enjoy is like the playful back and forth between him and the dragon.
Brilliant. Like, it starts off brilliant. Yeah.
Yeah, because the dragon's just pissed off that he's woken up with an axe in his snout, and he's like, "Did you hit me with an axe?" And it's very much like, dude, what happened? But it soon becomes clear, and that the memory starts filling in, and Thor was tracking whoever was stealing the village's dogs.
Yes,
along the shore. He found out that it was trolls, and he met the dragon as they went along, and the dragon decided to help him kill all the trolls.
Which is a great picture, man. That page of him killing. Yeah. Trolls, yeah. Although they do suspiciously look just like orcs.
Yes, they
yeah,
do.
Yeah,
and that's the two panels underneath that are the dragon throwing up a troll's head, and he goes, "Oh yeah, there's definitely trolls."
I wrote this down in my notes. There is some form of bodily fluid all over this issue.
Yes, there is. It's disgusting.
Yeah, blood, spit, you know.
Vomit. A lot of vomit.
A lot of vomit.
I don't think Thor's hair is dry on a single page of this.
It's not. It's always something in it in there, yeah.
And then they go on to say that once they'd killed all the trolls, they'd found their vile grog.
Yes, so which they decided to drink. I mean, don't drink troll moonshine, I suppose is what it must be. Yeah, but they do anyway, don't they? I just love the way he looks like a sort of cross between what I think of it a dragon and a sort of humanoid orca, this dragon.
Yeah, it's a really interesting design. It's sort of got two massive horns, rhino horns almost, on its snout.
Yeah.
And it's all sort of, I don't know, there's something about a dog around its mouth as well.
I was going to say dog-like. It's got that sort of anthropomorphic dog thing going on, doesn't it? Like something out of Shrek or something, even.
Yeah, but there's no getting away in every single panel and representation of it that it is something that you should be absolutely frightened of and would just bite you in half at any moment.
Yeah, and I've got a few metaphors for that later, for what happens later. But yeah, there's a strange bonding, or we think maybe a bonding, that's happened between him and Thor. And they decide they have to prove that they've killed all these orcs, not these orcs, these trolls. And they go off with the, I don't know if it's just maybe me, but as more drink gets consumed, the Viking ladies begin to look quite sexier.
Well, they take them to where they killed all the trolls, and the village of ladies are very pleased that there's nothing to kill their dogs anymore. And they start getting stuck into what's left over of the grog. And the ladies do suddenly get a lot less soldier-like. Yeah. And you get the old...
they sort of shake their hair out, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thor surrounded by a couple of ladies. And he's probably had a very good night there.
The intimation is there that he is boning these Viking ladies on the bodies of dead trolls. There is that.
I've literally just noticed that they are sitting on dead trolls while they're having a lot of fun. Yeah.
Good on him. Get it where you can.
But the interesting turn is the next bit where they both sort of go off on their separate ways and go home.
Yeah. Now this, I mean, every page, I think this is definitely something that Jason Aaron has had a big night out. Do you know what I mean? It's a parallel for every big night we had when we were in our, you know, 20s, isn't it? You know, it's sort of no worry about getting home. And that's one of the best scenes. One of my favourite drawn scenes is the page where it says 3 days later, and he's kind of dragging his axe over the Rainbow Bridge, and he comes across Heimdall. And Heimdall says, "Get thee to a bath, son of Odin. Thou art befouling the Rainbow Bridge with thy stench of dragon bile and troll inebriates." And...
It feels a bit like, I don't know, it's a bit like when you come home and he's the inconsequential family member that meets you first.
Yeah, yeah. Like, or the postman or something.
The close family relative that isn't really responsible for you and lectures you, but it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, you bump into granddad downstairs or something like that. Yeah. It's a bit like that, isn't it? And he's like, "Fuck me, dude, you stink." Yeah.
And you just see him passed out in his room after he's wrecked it.
Now, that
axe to the wall
is the best drawing of someone who's having a hangover sleep that I've seen for a long time. I mean, that could be straight out of Geordie Shaw.
Yeah.
If there was
Is he got his hand on some weird bongo drum? Is that a drum?
I don't know if it's one of those sort of weird pillows you get in hotels. Do you know what I mean? Right. Is it what they call? Ballasts or something, are they? I can't remember what they're called now.
You're asking the wrong person there.
Yeah, I know. You're a big guy. Just by the hour, my friend. And yeah, sort of... And he's sort of trashed his room a bit as he's sort of fallen about, and he's just having that sleep that is the sleep that we are all justified in having after being like really drunk.
Yeah. My favourite bit isn't actually the axe in the wall; it's the score marks of where it's clear that it's a regular habit of putting the axe in the wall.
It is, isn't it? That's true. Yeah, good stuff.
I loved little details in the art like that because. I mean, that must have taken seconds just to add in, but it added so much layers to
it does.
That scene.
Yeah, and just out the window, you can see the starscape You know, because we know they're out in wherever Asgard is. Yeah. Asgard. Don't call it. It's Asgard, isn't it? Right.
I can't remember if this is Asgard or Asgardia. It must be old Asgard, mustn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, so I think
so. It switches to Asgardia later on in the run.
Of course, yeah. There's
Asgard
some...
gets
destroyed,
I think.
And we'll...
It's a really interesting double page, isn't it?
It
because
really is. Yeah.
Reflected on the other side of it, you've got the dragon who, so far up to now, you think, oh, ancient being.
Yeah.
But you see the dragon going home and having a conversation with his disappointed dad.
Yeah. I looked up dragons in Norse mythology. You'll be glad to hear. In Norse mythology, a dragon represents a force of destruction. Fafnir, the dragon, or the great serpent. You've got Jormungand, the Midgard serpent, at Jormungand, and so enormous that his body surrounds and protects Midgard. Norse for dragon is Dreki, believe it or not. There you go. So that's important that these dragons are seen as a force for destruction. They are the big villain, aren't they, in a lot of Norse mythology? They are the thing that can't be defeated, the final battle kind of thing.
Well, it's mentioned later on, isn't it,
yeah,
that he is from the lineage that will eventually cause Ragnarok.
Yes, yeah, and he was there. And I think he says something like, I was here when Earth was just lava, or my lineage was here when I was... But essentially, he's just the Thor version of Thor. And we find out with something of a sinister twist later, but he's just Thor in Dragon World, isn't he, really?
Yeah. He's the young dragon that doesn't agree with his dad and doesn't necessarily want to be his dad and is trying to rebel. But how the fuck do you rebel when you're a dragon?
Yeah, and he literally says, you're not in charge of me, in a dragon way, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Really well done, man. The dialogue in this is lovely. Really nicely done. And the art just holds together at every page. It's an absolute pleasure. I'm only reading it on the Marvel app, but I think I need to get a copy of it. It's so good.
I don't think it's my favourite art, if I'm honest.
Okay.
I don't just really have a problem with it. I don't know. I feel like it's trying to emulate S.A.D. Ribic stuff a bit too much.
Okay.
I think if they'd maybe just tried to make it their own a bit more, maybe it's more the colouring than the line work. Things just sort of bleed together a little bit too much. Like we say, his hair on the page where he comes back. But his hair is always in his face all the way through this.
I find that really annoying. I can't talk to women who have hair in their face. I find it annoying as well.
I don't think there's really a single panel where he hasn't got hair flowing across his face in some way or another.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the creator of the art. So it's Das Pastoris, which he was born 1956, a.k.a. his real name is Julio Martinez Perez. He started off in a fanzine called Zero. In 2007, he did Metabaron's Genesis Kastaka, which is incredible. Which is obviously Jodorowsky, but just beautiful, incredible stuff. And I think it's on sale, actually. If you go into Comixology at the moment, it's on sale in the Humanoids section. He famously did one of the worst covers ever for a comic called Wolverine Revolver. Have a look for that. It's not badly drawn. It's just incredibly ill-conceived, where he makes Wolverine look just not like Wolverine. It's a very strange, it's almost Corbin-esque in its grotesquery. You know, it's a really strange one.
Oh my god!
Are you looking at it here?
Yeah.
That's weird, isn't it?
That is weird. There's a lot of teeth, isn't there?
Yeah, and those claws are quite long, aren't they?
That's the weird biceps, actually.
Yeah.
That caught my eye.
Yeah, a good cover, bad cover episode of the Awesome Pod last week, and I almost picked... The only reason I didn't pick it is because I so enjoyed the artwork in the inside of this. but yeah, so it's a weird one. He did Wolverine Revolver, he did the interiors as well. He's done a Punisher Max, a couple of issues of that, and he's done Wolverine Switchback. And he's done a lot of novel covers. So for some foreign editions, he did 5 covers for the Elric Stormbringer and the Elric series for Moorcock, which has got to be a favourite of yours, man. You must love that stuff, don't you?
No, I haven't heard of it, if I'm honest.
What, no, you never read any Elric novels?
No.
You'd like it, man. I think if you dig Lord of the Rings, as I know you do, you'll dig it, man. It's really good. Incredible. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, you're going to cost me money, man. And it's like your purpose in life is.
I know. Everyone says that. Stuff, yeah. I'm a big fan of Michael Moorcock. I would say probably Elric's his best one. P. Craig Russell did some of the comic recreations with First Comics in the 80s. I think I've got a feeling Mike Baron wrote them, but they're incredibly beautiful. Just Titan are putting them out, if you can find them. But the novels are brilliant, man. Michael Moorcock, you would just instantly become addicted to.
Yeah.
It's part of the Eternal Champion series, if you've heard of that, through Moorcock.
This is actually ringing a bell now.
Yeah, it's just brilliant. So we've got to that. So we've got the two irresponsible teenagers, because this is what they are in this, aren't they? They're just that time I had to pick my son up, you know, when he'd lost his shoes at a party on the beach. You know, it's that sort of thing, isn't it? It's sort of
it's a bit more than that, though, isn't it? Because they're irresponsible teenagers with massive power.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like it's the sort of power that you mistakenly think you might have when you are a teenager, but they actually have it.
With that reckless abandon. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Like it's that age of life where you just, it does not enter your head that you can die.
Yeah.
At all. And they sort of harness that, and it's accentuated with what they can actually do. And it's a really nice reflection. I think it's really clever how he uses the dragon to sort of reflect, and especially as the denouement of the issue. It's really interesting.
Yeah, it's quite an ending. Let's talk about that in a minute. But I think while you're mentioning the writing style, why don't we do a bit about the writing? So Jason Aaron, born 1973 in Jasper, Alabama, which is apparently he was quite a loner as a kid. I've heard him in the interview say, but he is actually the cousin of a guy called Gustav Hasford, who wrote the novel that Full Metal Jacket was based on, apparently.
Really? Yeah,
interesting is that. Which really influenced, the first time I'd heard of him was when he did the Vietnam book, The Other Side, which I think was Vertigo, which is a great book. In 2001, he won a Marvel Talent Search for an 8-page Wolverine story that he wrote. And he speaks quite a lot about how the themes in that Wolverine story continue all the way through a lot of his Wolverine work. My personal favourite of his is Scalped. Just multi-layered, clever, dark.
Yeah.
Yeah. Have you read Scalped, dude?
I haven't. I know it's one of those things that... Do you have... runs and titles and things that you stop yourself getting because you know that once you've got the first one, the dominoes are going to fall and it's all the way through.
Completely. Yeah. I'm an addictive personality when it comes to comics, I've got to tell you. Yeah.
So I've got a few runs like that where I'll either know that I've got enough time or resources to just blast through it.
It's a hell of a... It's 60 issues. It's a hell of a run, man. It's I'm hoping it's going to not that I'm overly bothered about TV and movies, but hopefully it's going to spark up. I think there's a TV series on the way from someone like HBO or someone like that. It's fucking dark, like, you know, methamphetamine use, heroin use, undercover cops, prostitution. You know, it's all set on a reservation. Current day, very good.
Network TV in America, then.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. CBeebies. So he is hugely prolific. I'm going to say he's probably Marvel's MVP at the moment. That's how I feel about his writing. I think he's consistent. He is mostly a Marvel writer, but like we say, when they get a little run going, we do see some Southern Bastards out of him. Other important moments in his writing career, that not that I've read it all, because I'm not a big Star Wars fan, but when he took over Star Wars, I think the first issue of Star Wars sold 1 million copies.
Really?
Incredible. And he's a huge Star Wars geek, and if you listen to him being interviewed, he talks about he had that, you know, that collected, that box, if you had all the Star Wars figures, it was the shape of Darth Vader and you could line them all up.
Right.
Yeah, one of them. He said his dream was to do a Star Wars comic where everyone had a lightsaber, and he gives Chewie two. I think that's like genius. I always wonder why they didn't all have one, you know. I'd have had one if I was, you know. Conan, he's back. He was back on Conan with who was the artist? Oh, I'm blanking on his name as well now. I met him at London Super Comic Con, and I've got a page of his art. But anyway, his run on Conan was superb. He did the first 12 issues, and he's coming back for a King Conan, which was scheduled for December this year, but is looking like it's going to be the new year sometime. Wolverine, the X-Men, which I think he was over in the UK promoting when he went to Thought Bubble. He was at Thought Bubble a few years ago when it was still at the Armouries, and I got the opportunity to have a good chat with him. And the sweetest, nicest, like, he's not got one of these guys who's just full of their own piss and importance. He will have a conversation with you, an interesting dude. Did some Punisher Max with Steve Dillon, which is superb, very dark, deals with Stockholm Syndrome, deals with a lot of strange stuff, but the next best thing to reading a Garth Ennis Punisher, easily, I would say. He's done some Doc Strange, so we did some Son of Barson and the Goddamned.
The Doctor Strange run. I picked that up. That was a really good run. That was with Bacalo, wasn't it?
That's right. Yeah, no, it's really
nice. That was a really good. Some of the ideas in that were really, like, I thought they were really dark. Like, he was siphoning off power from a whole monastery of monks up into Tibet somewhere that were just giving their lives, siphoning their life force into Doctor Strange using his powers and stuff.
Oh, wow. Really okay. Good. If there's ever an artist you want to draw Doc Strange, I've got to say Bacalo's on the list somewhere, isn't he?
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
I know Mr. Imber's a fan. I think he's got an original page from
that
one.
Yeah, he's talked to me a few times about that. Yeah, definitely. The other one I was going to mention, Top Cow, he did Ripclaw, which I have not read either.
No idea.
His Thor run is, it's almost one that needs a chart so you can work out which book to go to.
It's not too bad. You know what?
Yeah.
This is, I feel like, because my comic collecting has sort of been described through Jason Aaron's Thor run. It's defined my arc of collecting singles. It's been ever present all the way through it, up to now, or up to it ended.
Okay.
And I sort of feel like the fact that he stayed on Thor all the way through that, and you can mark how many times Marvel rebooted and changed and renumbered.
Yeah.
And all the way through that, the consistent thing was Jason Aaron writing Thor, and he managed to ride all of those reboots and keep it coherent and, like, almost use those sort of marketing and branding things as a way to refresh his stories and things like that, rather than,
right,
I don't think he ever did it cynically. I think they gave him enough respect to tell him what was happening so he could shape where he wanted his stories to go.
Yeah.
I never felt like that he just sort of rebooted every time Marvel rebooted. I always thought it stayed pretty consistent. And I thought that was quite rare, because a lot of books would just change unrecognizably whenever there was a renumbering or something.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I get what you mean. And I think we've had this conversation. And I was initially not taken at all with the thoughts of Jane Foster, spoilers, being the new Thor. And I was just, I don't read many. I read a few sort of female-led comics. I read them mostly because I'm a bloke and I like to, you know, compare myself to being Spider-Man most of the time. But, you know, Dazzler and, you know, She-Hulk were never on the top of my list, although I did read them occasionally. But I didn't understand it. I think I didn't quite get it. I didn't quite get what he was going for, and I dropped off at that point. I heard him describe it, it'd be about 6-7 months ago, about why he did it. And I think if that had been communicated better to me at the time, I might have gone with it more, because I understand.
Can I guess what he said?
Go on, man, yeah.
I always read it as a cancer story rather than a Thor story.
Yeah.
It was literally a battle against cancer. It was using superheroes as a cipher of battling cancer, and he just happened to use Jane Foster for that, rather because she is in the Thor world, and it made the most sense to put her in those boots. Really?
Yeah, I think it was a combination of a very good friend of ours recently had breast cancer, and when I heard him talk about it, suddenly I was taken. Do you know what I mean? I thought I need to sort of read this. And there's some absolutely beautifully poignant moments in it that just blow you away in that series. There really is, isn't there?
There's some really amazing... I've unfortunately had to sort of witness someone lose that fight in the last few years, you know? And there's some really, really poignant and important moments in that. Like, he uses, because the idea being is that every time Jane Foster takes on the powers of Thor, she's actually killing herself. She's not.
Yes. Yeah.
She's,
that's the
she's,
point.
Undoing the work of all of her chemotherapy and all her treatment. And it's sort of,
that's an incredible story beat to have as well.
It is. Yeah. And he uses it in really interesting ways to ask questions of how important is it to be this hero and to fight that? Is it worth sort of killing yourself over? And it's also sort of on the other side of it, it's the lengths you go to fight and finding reasons to keep fighting. And it's just really, yeah, there's some moments in it that absolutely floor you. And the way he brings it full circle is really great.
And I'm a complete and utter fool for not having read it. Do you know what I mean? I just presumed. Here we go. Another sales technique to get another number one. Do you know what I mean? Get it on Bleeding
I feel sorry for him because everyone just attached to female Thor. That's all that run. People saw that run as for a long time.
Yeah.
And that weren't really what it was about. I actually found it really interesting. I found his approach to Jane Foster Thor as interesting as his approach to unworthy Thor.
Oh, okay. Right. Yeah.
Making Thor unworthy and forcing him to look as to why that might be, or as to trying to regain his stature and his powers. I thought his journey through all of those struggles was just as interesting as the other one. I thought and he played them together really well.
Yeah, no, I agree. And he did so with some amazing artists as well. We got Ron Garney. Love Ron Garney's work, man. Absolutely love it. I'm a big fan of his
stuff. Doubtman knocks it out of the park.
Russell Doubtman is incredible. Yeah. Fucking hell. It's weird that this is only a few years old, but I'm sort of thinking, oh, I love this. You know, although Nick Klein's strong at the moment. Yeah.
I weren't keen on the Del Mundo stuff, if I'm honest. That was probably my least favourite.
Okay. Yeah, he's a little bit Marmite sometimes. Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah. I think it was a great little story was Thor's during Battle World.
Yeah, I did like that with Beta Ray Bill and like an army of frog Thors or something.
Yeah. I mean, let's talk a little.
It was like a little police procedural, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. And it was like they were like kind of the police, weren't they?
There were loads and loads of Thors, and they were the police force of Battle Worlds, weren't they?
That's it. It was good. It was a good idea. I mean, to be fair, Thor he goes through the shitter a lot, doesn't he? I mean, I tried to think of things that he had been in the past. So he joined with the Phoenix power. We had Thunderstrike. We had that nonsense. We had that 90s stripper costume that he got given. Iron Hammer. At one point, Danny Cage Thor, which is something. I'm not sure what that's about. Thorian. We had Thorian. It was a cross between him and Orion. That's all right. He was a horse-faced creature for a while, which is, you know. And then he was a frog for a while. So I started reading Thor when Kirby was doing it. You know, and it was just this consistent, fuck me, what's happening now? This is just incredible, you know, some of these. And the next thing you know, as great as Simonson's run was, I did go, oh, why have you made him a frog, for fuck's sake? Yeah.
I do keep meaning to, next time I sort of sign up to Marvel Unlimited, I am going to blast through the Simonson run, because I feel like that's a gap that I should definitely fill.
Yeah, it looks great, man. And there's some great stuff around it. Around issue 300, when they do the sort of the Nibelung, they basically do that, you know, which is pretty impressive as well. Created in 1962, first appeared in Journey into Mystery number 83, adapted into existence, so because he obviously already existed, by Jack Kirby, Stan Lee and Larry Lieber in a mythological way. The second time Kirby had drawn a version of Thor in 1957 in a story of Tales of the Unexpected, Kirby drew a picture of a kind of more Norse-esque character. And in the 1992 interview, Kirby said he wanted to sort of modernise him somewhat. Obviously a member of the Avengers. Then we had the Donald Blake thing, which kind of... Is it mostly forgotten with in Aaron's run? Is it the Donald Blake stuff?
I think so. I think he properly threw a lot of... I think he threw a lot away to define his beginning and end points, because he was very clear from the start that he wanted to do this three ages of Thor. I do wonder I think he very much wanted to go his own way. I don't know enough about the history of Thor to spot any
homages or any changed or any of that sort of stuff. I lose track of it, man, every so often, but yeah. Okay, so back to
I don't mind that. I think it's really good. a lot of people sort of forget that, well, the story in front of you's got to work.
Yeah, that's very true, actually.
You know what I mean? Yeah. If you spend a whole issue sort of being clever and throwing back to historical stuff that not everyone's going to know.
Yeah,
it's good for the people that spot it, but the story's still got to work.
It's the comics equivalent of everyone at the scene of a murder is called Carpenter or Cronenberg or Lynch, or you know, it's like this, isn't it? I read the recent Hellblazer, the black, you know, the oversized run that DC are doing at the moment, and it's written by Tommy Taylor, who's Australian, and it's
I think I've got that in my box actually.
Okay. The art's lovely. Who's the guy who did the art? It's the guy who did The Boys. And I like his art, but the problem is the bar's called Dylan's. There's another character. Oh, here's Officer Delano. You know, it's like that, Delano. It's like that, and it's, oh, Christ.
Oh, it's the fella, the artist is, it's the guy that did Transmetropolitan, isn't it? Derek Robinson?
That is Derek Robinson, yeah, it is, yeah. And I really like Derek. I'm a huge fan. I always buy sketchbooks whenever he's at New York and stuff, and I've got a couple of bits of art of his. But he needs to visit London. And Tommy Taylor needs to realise what London's like as well, and that police don't walk around with revolvers. And, you know, sort of thing. And
I'm loving that. I think I've only read about the first three or four, but the Cy Spurrier one, I think, is the closest to 80s Hellblazer has been since 80s Hellblazer.
Yeah, my son's reading that, and he really rates it. But unfortunately, it's just about to end, I think, isn't it? Is what
so I hear. Yeah, so I hear. I don't know. Maybe I think there's been a big sort of promotional push for people to buy the trade, and maybe that sales will be enough to convince people. But we'll see.
Yeah.
Cy Spurrier is probably who has taken over from my Jason Aaron. I went through a phase of pretty much picking up everything Aaron wrote, and for the last few years it's been Cy Spurrier's stuff.
Oh wow, okay. Oh good.
His Dreaming run has been really good.
Yeah, I think you're into all them, are you? Yeah, I buy my son all them. In fact, I've got a few of him because I've got to drop them off to him on tomorrow. But yeah, I do like what they've done with that. It's a shame they didn't sell so well or didn't get continued a lot of it. But there you go. I mean, that's what they're saying. They used to say that about Vertigo, didn't they? They used to say in the early days of Vertigo, it was supported by the sales in the UK. Because we were the ones buying it. But then again, the comic market over here was slightly larger then. Okay, so should we go back to... We'll go back to the story. And we're cracking on with time here. Oh, look at this. We decided to do a 20-page comic. I mean...
I don't know what page it is, but it's the page where... So Thor comes back to Midgard answering the prayers of the Shield Maidens that he left a week after. So he's been back to resting up for a week back at Asgard, and then he gets called back for the prayers of the Shield Maidens again. Yep. And he comes back with his goats pulling his chariot. Tooth Gnasher and Tooth Grinder. Yeah. That's right. They're all the way through the run, by the way. They crop great, up aren't they? All over the place.
Doesn't Punisher get them in Punisher War of the World? That's a great fucking... I love that series, man. It makes me laugh so much. Yeah. Go on, sorry,
that's
man.
Up there with, that's up there with War of the Realms, where you have dwarfs in Iron Man suits.
Yeah, it is. It's just
I
nuts.
I love that so much.
Yeah. Good. So, he gets called back, doesn't he? And there's obviously a problem.
Yeah. Thor asks, is it troll? It's not trolls this time. And it turns out that it's the young dragon who has come back to the village looking for a bit more of a good time.
Yeah.
And he's just sort of drunk everything and eaten everything and demanded everything. And he's just there to party. And he's the guy that wants to keep partying when everyone else is sobered up.
Yeah. We've always... Well, this is what I was thinking a lot about. We've all had this friend, haven't we, who we're kind of... Oh, he seems a good bloke. I've met him at work or something. And you invite him along to your mates in the pub, and it turns out he's a fucking crazy man. You know, and he ends up drunk because he thinks, oh, I'll get in, I'll fit in with these lads, I'll show them how brilliant I am. They must be crazy. I'll show them how crazy I am. He turns out to be a bit on the chisel, or you know, just a bit of a maniac or something like that. And that's the equivalent of this dragon, isn't he? So I've experienced partying, must be like that all the time, and he's headed back to the village. But it's taken a turn, isn't it?
It's another one of those sort of early 20s thing where as you get a little bit older, sort of into your mid-20s, you tend to always go out with the guys that have the same limit as you.
Yeah, and you can spot the maniacs, can't you?
Yeah, and you sort of, and this is the phase where you're sort of 18 to 20, where you're mixing with the maniacs and defining where your limits are.
You're right. Yeah.
And the dragon has done what dragons do and has a young woman in his claws. He doesn't seem to be, what was it? Oh, yeah, he wanted to take her dancing, that was it.
Yeah, yeah.
And this escalates over the course of a page and a half.
Yeah.
To the dragon biting her head off.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's suddenly, and that's the point where somebody smashes a bottle in the kitchen at the house party and you think,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
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 This is going to go or badly. Someone,
yeah, yeah. They're playing catch with like your mum's favourite figurine.
Yep.
Do you know what I mean?
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And it's really, it's almost sensitively written. It's like giving a baby a gun.
I actually kind of, I felt bad for them both, almost.
Yeah, you know. The dragon didn't really seem to realize that it was doing anything wrong. And it's almost like some weird instinct took over before it chomps the head off this girl. And even afterwards, he's not really recognized that he's done anything wrong.
Yep.
But the page before that is the worst rendering of Thor in the whole book. The bottom of the page where it just does not look like Thor whatsoever.
Where he bites the head off, that one.
So it's literally the opposite corner of where the dragon bites his head off. Okay. The representation of Thor.
Yeah, I see it. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Yeah. It's shock.
Yeah, that's like, a bit weird, really... actually. Yeah, I can't quite figure that one out.
Yeah,
so he, and basically Thor kind of, the realisation hits him that he's gonna have to kill the dragon, doesn't he?
I'm not sure if he's realised it yet.
Right, okay.
Because there's a few more places. He's realised that he's got to try and knock some sense into the dragon, and he's realised that, like we were saying, he's crossed Thor's line, so he has become the guy that you realize is a mentalist, not a mate.
Yep.
And he's trying to draw away from the sort of the village, and it's not a drunken argument, but it's like when you're talking down a drunk person, and you know that they're not really listening. So and the dragon's really hurt when Thor starts attacking him. It's like, I thought you were my best friend and all this sort of thing.
Yep.
Because they had one or a 3 weeks of good times. Yep. You know? And what does he say? Yeah, stand down or die, dragon. And Thor sort of starts attacking him, and obviously he's a dragon.
Yeah, he's not a pushover. You do wonder. No. Is he going to beat him, don't you? You do, because he does strike him a couple of times and not much happens.
And the dragon, it's almost heartbreaking. He goes, if you're not my friend, then I think you should leave my party.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's such a childish thing to say when he's just displayed that he's capable of this massive destruction.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And you get, it goes back to that, what we were talking about is, you do get these huge men children that get drunk and start crying and acting like kids, like proper kids. They don't understand after they've just lamped someone. They don't understand what they've done.
Yeah. I think as well, yeah. I think what it really brings to the fore here is, after we talked about the design facially, especially of the dragon, we begin to realise that it's designed that way because it's got some brilliant facial acting as this goes on. They have a bit. They sort of confront each other, and he says, "I am Scabgag, the dragon son of the winged vipers from the mountain of fire, who ate the flesh of the first man." And he gives him this little soliloquy, or rather, this little speech, and he does it. And the acting is brilliant. You know, there's a ferocity, there's a vulnerability, there's a proudness to that. Just that single image that Pastorius does, I really like that, man. Really thought it was good.
Yeah, and this. And exactly after that bit, which is where Thor realizes, right. And it's a coming of age. Like, this dragon is becoming everything his father wanted him to be.
Yes.
In this soliloquy to Thor, he is explaining and realizing, yes, I am exactly what my father wants me to be. And that is my destiny to be that.
That's a huge theme in it, is the destiny of, are we destined to be what we are destined to be? Can we leave it somehow? And we kind of proved that we can't a little bit in this, aren't we?
Well, I think it's especially interesting for Thor, because there's obviously the play all the way through is the father and son relationship between Thor and Odin.
Right, yeah.
And especially in the young Thor, where Thor is so desperate not to be his father, not to be the stuffy statesman or the warmonger or...
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? He so desperately doesn't want to be him. And I think... when he sees this dragon, who he obviously reflects parts of his personality, or certainly the similar stages of life,
yeah,
sort of start becoming what it inevitably should become. I think that sort of something might snap in him a bit, and what happens next might be a reaction of Thor denying that it's going to happen to him. And this is the genius of Jason Aaron. It's we're sort of 18 pages into the story, yeah, and he's built up to this massive confrontation, and he literally does it across the fold with a caption of hours later.
Yeah, I mean, spoilers here. I mean, we've spoiled most of this already, so you shouldn't worry. But we don't actually see the main brutality of the thrust of the fight and the death, do we? So no. The implication is that Thor has killed the dragon, and he is sitting there in a rather sort of sullen, regretful way on a branch, on a log, with his axe in the side of the tree, and he's just killed this dude. And the truth of it is, he could have handled that much better. He could have controlled the situation. You had someone who'd probably never been drunk before, who'd probably never had gone to a human party before, who probably got a bit carried away with that's what humans are like, and he must feel a bit of the responsibility for this Thor, I think.
I think so. I think you're right. It's that same thing of you do feel responsible for the people you hang out with,
yeah,
don't you?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Sometimes you let yourself be led, and sometimes it is your responsibility to bring friends away from that brink.
Yeah.
I think a lot of it is, you can sort of talk about Friday and Saturday nights in clubs and sort of compare it to a lot of what's going on.
You can,
in this comic,
yeah, in High Street,
really.
Watford High Street
and,
or something. Yeah,
absolutely. And most fights that get broken up are between people that know each other who are trying to stop each other doing something stupid.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it's very much like
usually
that.
Involving
and,
a lot of women screaming at you. Yeah. We've all been
Gary,
there.
Gary, leave him, Gary.
yeah. Which is what these Faroe Islands Vikings are. Get rid of him, Gary. Do him, Gary. You know, it's like that, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It is. They are at one point really telling him to kill this dragon, and yeah, it is a bit like
he's
that.
He's mugged
yeah,
you off. It's like that, isn't it?
And the head, the Valkyrie, or she's not a Valkyrie, she's the head shield maiden, I guess, of the Faroe Islands, offers Thor a drink, and and she promises another party of good times, and he just pours it out and says he's going home.
Yeah, which he does, and then there's a lovely shot of him, and this was the really lovely moment, I thought, when he flies away with his goats, and the body's being burnt. So they're burning the dragon, yep, on the hilltop, as is, I suppose, is their wont as Vikings. And around it, there's a lovely couple of things around it. The trees have been cut back to provide the wood and stuff like that. It's a beautifully thought out panel. And it just says, let's go home. And then with the title of the next story, bottom left, it's says a lot, doesn't need to say a lot, if you see what I mean.
Yeah. It is really nice. He's sort of looking over his shoulder back at it, and the smoke is going out over the bay, and sort of in. Yeah, it's really nice.
With the meaning that he's learned a life lesson and he'll move on probably to the next one. It's kind of where it sits. So it's an evolution of the character.
What do you think the lesson is there, though? Do you think it's sort of regret that he didn't rein it in, or that he's sorry that he had to kill it? Do you think he would have rather have not killed the dragon?
It's a funny one, isn't it? Are we getting involved? Are we young and idiotic enough to get involved in things that perhaps we shouldn't be? Are we encouraging people to do stuff that perhaps we shouldn't be, even though it's done in sort of youthful enthusiasm? Are we? Do our actions have an implication? So does this sort of 3-day party that you had with a load of shield maidens and dragon has basically resulted in the death of a dragon? Yeah, it's a funny
it's
one.
It's a
isn't
bit like it's. You can also look at it as a grander statement of mythology as well.
Okay.
If you take it from a higher view of he's a Norse god, it's his job to slay dragons, and it's meant to be a heroic act.
Yeah,
like he, and it's always couched in the way of saving villagers or it being the heroic thing to do, and he's obviously just killed a dragon and feels quite shitty about it.
Yeah.
And that plays into Thor not wanting to be, or at this stage of Aaron's Thor, the young Thor, not wanting to be that stereotypical god. He doesn't want to be the Dragon Slayer. He doesn't want to be that.
Yeah.
And he wants all of the adulation and things, and he wants all of the daring do and all of that. But I kind of feel like he's done something that he'll be celebrated for, and he's not very proud of it.
Yeah.
And I wonder if that's the first sort of time in with Aaron's Thor that this is the case.
Yeah, could be,
couldn't
it?
There's a bit of regret for him doing what everyone expects him to do, and I think maybe he sort of resents that he's expected to do these things.
Yeah, and then it moves into, like you say, the sort of environmentalist Midgard stuff with Ribbic back on art. And Thor doesn't actually appear for about 5 or 6 pages in the first issue, so we get that we get that little pause, don't we? We've seen him there, and Earth goes on, and then he appears. I like the way he does that. So many people might just put Thor on the first page of the next comic, post that quite a sort of sensitive moment, but he doesn't. He holds back, and then he includes him. Yeah, it's really good. I absolutely loved it, man. I absolutely loved it. I read it a couple of times now, and you're right. There's a lot of meaning there. There really is.
I think that's part of the beauty of how he splits it up into ages. Like, Aaron uses superheroes as a cipher for what he really wants to talk about, doesn't he?
Yeah.
It's not necessarily about Thor. So in this alone, it's about taking responsibility. It's the old superhero thing of having power and not always being ready to use it or regretting having to use it. And
the intricacies of friendship sometimes, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really is, isn't it? You know, like, we choose our friends, don't we? Sometimes we rush in a little bit to choose our friends, don't we? Occasionally it's a little bit unwise of us. And you sort of learn that as you get older, that the people you surround yourselves with have got to be, it's a selfish thing to say, but they've got to be quite right, haven't they? You know, you don't surround yourself with people who are going to cause you absolute fucking heap loads of trouble, and you have to go and wait for them in a car outside the police station later.
Well, some people do, though, don't they?
I know.
I mean, some people do. I mean,
yeah.
I it gets me thinking about sort of the friends that I had in my sort of late teens, 20s. And it is very much circumstance. It's the people that just happen to be around.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And you do that all the way through life. You change jobs. Maybe you move. And you just sort of make sometimes you'll keep them, but you'll be at a distance and the relationship will be different. And
we're thrust into social environments, aren't we, as comic creators and comic fans and convention attendees. And you know as well as I do, because I've glanced at you occasionally with that knowing look. Well, we've been in a pub and we're surrounded with people. And I'm like, who the fuck is that dude? Do you know what I mean? It's like that.
Yeah. But that, do you know what? Comic cons and the whole thing of actually getting into a scene like making comics has helped me shape my own circle of people that I want to spend time with.
Yeah, I agree.
And it's one of the first times in my life where it wasn't just a case of choosing from the people that I happen to see every day.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It was a way that you could actually make distance friendships work, because you had this network of events where maybe you'd see each other a couple of times a year, and that would help cement like the digital relationships and communication that you had.
Yeah,
you know?
And the WhatsApp groups or whatever, you know, or the DMs.
Yeah,
I get you, man. Yeah, yeah. And it's a strange landscape now, isn't it? We're not. Suddenly, I wouldn't mind going to a party with a dragon, a load of shield maidens, even if I had to kill him at the end of it. You know, it wouldn't be too bad. Yeah. Good-o. No, good choice, man. Very good. We've rattled on for an hour. Fuck me. How do we do that on one issue? But there you go. Okay, so we're going to pause the advert now, and then we're going to come back, and I've got a few questions for you and ask you what you're up to. So we've got a new sponsor this week. Great to have them on board. Do you enjoy having a high sex drive? Do you love the thought of shagging a cousin? Or maybe just bumming a parked car, a hole in a melon, or an old tennis racket? Then why don't you should enjoy methamphetamine, making the banal, everyday boringness sexy. Warning, may cause a lack of self-respect, feelings of low mood, or feelings of deep-seated inadequacy, just like getting a Valiant Comics portfolio review. There you go, that's the advert for you.
I'm glad you're attracting the big hitters now.
Yeah, methamphetamine's a big payer. We'll take money from anyone. Yeah, good.
I feel sorry for the prozzies of the early years.
I know, yeah, they just couldn't keep the payments up, man. I suppose with social distancing... Yeah, my high sponsorship rates must have really hit back at them, you know.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah. I know, people get desperate, don't they?
Yeah.
Like Valiant. Anyway,
Topical.
Thank you. Right. I'd like to ask you what you're getting on with at the moment. I see The Adventures of Silas Pope, which I still have in my inbox. I promise you I'll read, man. I just don't have time. Is currently on Amazon. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that one? So that's a textbook, isn't it? That's a prose book.
Yeah, it's a prose book. Yeah. So after volume one of Cognition.
Yep. Very good, which I loved very much. Very good, man. Like the British BPRD, as I think a clever person once referred to it as.
Clever person, it must have been you. yeah, I've still got plans to make more comics, but it's difficult to make comics, so most people will know that.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
So I needed a way to keep writing in that world where I didn't necessarily have to rely heavily on collaboration, where I could just get something done and just rely on myself to do it. Yeah. So I started writing some short stories about Silas Pope, who is the guy that runs the British cult secret service in the comic. And I just started writing short stories about his early life before he meets the robot and the rat.
Yeah.
So it's very much like an occult horror short story, collection of occult horror short stories in the 19th century.
Yep.
About a young man learning to become a spy and a magician.
Nice. Good stuff. You're also very busy lettering. You've become the go-to character in British comics, as I understand now. I made that up the same, but you're busy lettering. I know you've just done Space Warp, haven't you? You've done some stuff on Space Warp.
Yeah, it's lovely to do that. It's not really. It's a bit weird getting emails from Pat Mills.
I know, because you messaged me saying I've just had an email from Pat Mills. Mate, superb job on that book. Love that book. It looks great. Everyone's pulled together on that one. I'm really pleased with it. Even the small amount of promotion I helped with it. And you've also, to even best that, you lettered my last comic. So that's very exciting. You did
with Mr. Cumber.
Tony Osmond, with the Mighty Cumber.
Oh, is that contractually what
you have to call him? Yeah, otherwise he sends me a letter. A very polite letter, but it's quite a threatening undertone.
Yeah.
Which looked great, man. Yeah, and we've had so many comments of people saying you managed to characterise your lettering in keeping with the story, which I think, is that something you try and do, is it? Or?
I do, because I try to. Sometimes you get projects through where it's, especially with indies, I think lettering becomes more important the further down the experience scale of some of the creators goes.
Right.
So sometimes, if it's someone's first comic, sometimes I think it's just really the approach should be, right, it needs to be functional. So the lettering needs to be clear, the story needs to flow, the nuts and bolts of it have to work. That's the most important thing.
Yep.
And as people's experience with making comics goes up a bit more, I think that you can start bringing elements of the lettering in to enhance what the writer and the artist are trying to do a bit more. Someone will probably be really annoyed with me for saying that.
Everyone gets annoyed with me. It's fine. You get used to it. Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily come down to experience, but I think it's confidence as well. Once you've got a writer that knows how the nuts and bolts of a comic works, and you don't have to worry about the base of just the story being functional, then you have a bit more latitude to add to what the writer and the artist are already doing.
Okay. Yeah.
And I think we had a few conversations about sort of your inspirations or the feel of what you were trying to go for, and we sort of agreed on sort of indie underground comics with an X,
definitely.
Sort of a jumping off point.
Yeah.
So it needs to be a little bit grubby, a little bit
Who are you talking to? You're just talking about me now. No, that's you're right. Yeah, you are right, man.
Just a little less refined.
Yeah.
But obviously, the same things have to happen. Like, it still has to function. It still has to work.
That sense of danger about it. It had to be that. Like, exactly. There's a brutal edge to the dude in that comic, and I think you carried that off really well.
I think the great thing about Cliff's artwork is, to me, it always looks as though he could have spent 10 minutes or 10 hours on it.
Right.
On every panel. Do you know what I mean by that? It's obviously really well finished.
Yes. Yeah,
but it has an edge to it where it's got something of a hasty sketch around the edges of it.
Okay,
like the bones of it came really quickly, and then he took ages refining it.
Okay, that's interesting. Okay,
I don't know how far off base that is, but there's just something to it, and that sort of speaks to you know the jokes that go around social media where where artists go, this took me 10 seconds and it's got 50 likes, this took me 10 hours and no one's looked at it. That's because there's something about the immediacy when someone is drafting.
Yeah.
And Cliff manages to keep that.
In a sort of quasi-spiritual way, you have to invoke an emotion into your work, don't you? You have to invoke something into it. And there's nothing worse than a comic that is just like absolutely perfectly correct, but has got no energy behind it. And whilst, you know, Cliff is just a great designer and everything works, there's an energy to what he does.
Yeah, that's probably the best way to actually encapsulate what I'm trying to say, is he keeps the energy even after he's refined what he's trying to do with it.
Yeah.
And that was sort of the theme. And obviously there's energy to the words you're putting down as well.
Well, we'll see about that. So, right, so enough of me and Cliff. What about you? So what other stuff I was going to mention. Second Breakfast. What's that? Was that something to do with... Are you still doing that? I know it's on your site still, but...
Yeah, it's on my site still. It's a little... Tolkien blog. So I love J.R. Tolkien, pretty much all of his stuff,
right?
Not just Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit, but all of his other obscure stuff.
Oh, nice.
And I just started writing little essays and things on what I was reading. So at the minute I'm about halfway through The Hobbit, and I just sort of write a little essay after every chapter I read. And it's because I've read the books so much, it's really interesting to sit down and properly try and dissect some things, because I feel like I know them. So it's really nice to look back at something you're really familiar with and try and find new layers in.
And you find something different. It's like when I review a book, I see different things in it. For example, what we talked about today, I saw a load of different stuff in it when I went back and analysed it as something that would be a conversational point, I think, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
And that must interest you from a point of view of... You have to get into a mindset when you review something, don't you?
Yeah. Oh, completely. Yeah.
So you've got a different head on. So you'll sit down, and if you're just reading for leisure, you're not as switched on as if you're reading to review something, are you?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Reading for pleasure. It's not reading for pleasure. I hate that term. But when I'm reading for something, you know what I mean? It's different. I find it affects me differently when I'm reading something for a review. Yeah.
So you don't read for pleasure?
No, I do. I do as well. But yeah, I do constantly. But
I'm not going to get too deep into what you read for pleasure.
You know, man. You've signed up to my OnlyFans account. You know what it's like. And what else? So what have you got on the... What are you planning to... Is you got anything on the horizon that you're going to be bringing out soon? Or, you know...
I've got... I coined my the title of my autobiography before we started recording, which is I've either got lots of time or lots of energy,
never
at the same time. But the one thing that never sort of abates is the ideas.
Good, yeah, yeah.
Which is good. It's just I don't seem to have a lot of time to act on them at the minute. There's lots of things in the pipeline. I've taken a step back the last few months, just try and give myself a break and figure out what I want to do next.
Yeah.
There's definitely more prose stuff.
Good.
I've actually got a little all ages cognition story that's sort of ready to go once I sit down to it. I'm writing a little with the help of the excellent Mr. Jimmy Furlong.
We've got Jimmy for ages. Yeah.
We're sort of halfway through a little RPG rule set for cognition.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And you can play it as a little sort of D&D game.
Oh, wow. Nice.
So, we've been sort of working at that a little bit.
That's the coolness now, isn't it? I remember me and Matt Harrower used to go in the comic shop and take the piss out of people playing Dungeons. Yeah, I'm the Dungeon Master. He used to do his voice. And then I found out he's fucking playing it.
Well, it was that MCM where they had Critical Role in it. And my favourite part of that weekend, my absolute favourite part of that weekend was the switch on... Saturday lunchtime where you see all these hastily made signs saying I will draw your D&D character.
Oh right, yeah. I get you. Yeah.
It was excellent.
Was that the one when I was at the was I there with Nobrow that time? I think is that right?
Sure, it might have been before you started with that.
Okay.
And the one before that.
Right. Yeah, I had a little little period where I didn't go to MCM because I couldn't stand it.
I'm sort of with you on that. I don't relish going back again.
Yeah, I have to go back there for work, so it's not too bad, but I'm getting paid. But yeah.
Yeah. It's a long haul. Like, I really enjoyed the first couple, but the couple after that, it's a really, it is work. I don't think you really go there to enjoy it.
My favourite way of enjoying MCM is going and meeting you lot and Imber and all that firm and going for a Chinese afterwards. That's by
that
far
was
the
my
best.
The last time we went.
Was that when there was a night crawler snogging some woman and everyone was giving them a round of applause and then Monkey walked in or something like that? You know, Monkey with a cloud. Yeah.
I mean, that sounds like the sort of thing that happened.
Oh, no, that's when we went there with Sam, didn't we? We went to that one, didn't we? Do you remember? When I was at the no-brow table. I think we went for a Chinese, didn't we? Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's nice. Yeah.
You behind the no-brow table is the highlight of most of my cons. I could stand and watch you. It's hilarious. Because I could read behind your eyes all the things that you don't say.
Stop talking to me. I say that to people a lot with my eyes. Yeah. All right, I've talked to you enough about how brilliant Hilda is. Go away. Buy something or go away. Yeah, there's a bit of that going on. No, folks, I love it. I love it all. But there you go. Yeah, good stuff.
But no, there's more. There'll be more pro short stories. And I've got lots of ideas for more comics. It's just getting back to it and all the usual problems we have making comics, you know.
Just going a quick call back to the episode. Mahmood Azra is the character, the artist who drew Conan.
I was going to ship that. I did look that.
Oh, good man! It just suddenly came to me. I love that dude's artwork, man. He's the burn of the moment. I tell you, he's brilliant.
He's sort of the new guy, isn't he? He's sort of. Yeah.
It's been about for a few years, but I mean, we were two tables down from him at the London Super Comic Con a few ago, and what a nice dude! Ah, love his work. So good. He's done some X-Men. You name it, he's done it. But yeah, really good. Good. So where can people find you, dude? Where can we look up all this marvelous stuff? And stalk online.
Everything's pretty much on kenreynolds.co.uk. There should be links to most stuff, and links to shops and things.
Cool. What's your Twitter?
I think it's Reynolds KR20. I think
you're right. Actually, yeah, that rings a bell. Yeah, good. Yeah. And obviously, we're best buddies on Facebook, and you can be found. Have you got like a Facebook page just for your stuff, or?
Yeah, I think I do have.
There's a Slice page, isn't there?
There is a Slice page. That's sort of it's nice when people check in there. It's still there, and there's still lots that you can sort of look back on.
Yeah.
I would encourage anyone if they're interested in experimental comics. It still all lives online. There's still 12 issues of stuff free to read on there. There's some really nice stuff if you want to.
Yeah, it's good stuff, man. I was in a couple of issues and enjoyed it very much. And like you say, it's on there. Or if you want to go and read the volumes, you can read them on Comic House if you're a member as well. So it's all in there.
Yes, they are. Yeah. Comic House, aren't they?
Good stuff, man. That's been brilliant. From my point of view, Jeremy is back from the printers this week, so watch out for Jeremy. He's in charge of I've got to say this right, the 42nd level of hell. Not level 42, that would be wrong. That's a band. So we've made that, so that's getting dropped into the Kickstarter bundles as the Tiger Style comes out as well. We'll be sending that in the next week or so. We are at Strange Apparitions tomorrow, so I'll be putting this out tonight as of Saturday morning. We'll be dropping up at Strange Apparitions in Spalding and dropping them some comics there from friends of Tribute Press. Looking forward to that. We'll probably sign a few issues while we're there. So if you are listening to this, you should be able to find us there. I think we're getting there about 10:30, something like that. So we got a big thing. I've just finished writing Atomic Hercules 3, and I'm just started writing Tony Osman 2. And
what are you going to ruin for everyone in that issue?
Just you wait, my friend.
I literally saw a tweet today from John Ottaway looking at his granddaughter's bouncy chair with a unicorn on it, and he said, "You've ruined this for me, Edmund."
I got so bored of fucking unicorns, man. And that is literally, I mean that literally. And so we got that. And then I'm in a complete turnabout. I'm writing the second Springworth book for Andy Hanks.
Ooh.
So that's on the way as well.
He's amazing, that guy.
Brilliantly, yeah, totally brilliant.
I mean, he's doing a month of sketches of just either of
celebrity
faces.
Isn't he? Really nice. Yeah,
yeah, it's really lovely work.
Yeah, he's a dude. He's a top dude. Good. All right, man. You can find my stuff at tributepress.bigcartel.com. My phone's buzzing because it's two Scotsmen who we've got on the next episode. It will be Mr. Cannon and Mr. McCulloch back with a certain Bronze Age, or not, I don't think it's Bronze Age, just post-Bronze Age Marvel comic. So we'll be talking about that in next week's episode. Thanks, man.
I'm surprised you didn't get a word out of James. It's such a shame.
Yeah, they both are. They both are. Yeah. I've pinned it down to two comics. We're not doing a whole run. Just two comics, and I'm gone forever. Good stuff, man. That's really good. No, absolutely brilliant. I'm glad you pointed me in the direction of that comic, man, because it was really a really enjoyable read, and it's prompted me to read everything else in Aaron's run that I missed. So yeah, it's been God bless the Marvel
app. Of comics.
Yeah, yeah. Right, dude, and I'll say goodbye now, and we'll continue chatting after I press stop. Cheers, dude. See you soon.